Chapter 21. The Bioterror Racket. As a tribal, war-making animal, humans are easily excited and frightened by the prospect of being attacked or invaded by hostile foreigners. As James Madison pointed out, this has, going back to ancient Rome, enabled states to maintain large armies, even though doing so places an enormous burden on the taxpaying citizen and frequently threatens his liberty. In a June 29, 1787 debate at the U.S. Constitutional Convention, Madison remarked, "In time of actual war, great discretionary powers are constantly given to the executive magistrate. Constant apprehension of war has the same tendency to render the head too large for the body. A standing military force with an overgrown executive will not long be safe companions to liberty. The means of defense against foreign danger have been always the instruments of tyranny at home." Picking up this theme 174 years later, President Eisenhower warned Americans in his farewell address, "We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes." Madison and Eisenhower were worried about the power of the state's war-making apparatus to subvert government of the people, by the people, and for the people. Towards the end of his life, Major General Smedley Darlington Butler, the most decorated Marine in U.S. history, concluded that war is a racket, as he memorably characterized it with a speech he frequently gave in the early 1930s and in a 1935 book. As he stated in his speech, "The record of racketeering is long. I helped purify Nicaragua for the International Banking House of Brown Brothers in 1909 to 1912. I brought light to the Dominican Republic for American sugar interests in 1916. In China, I helped to see to it that Standard Oil went its way unmolested." At the time Butler wrote his speech and book, biomedical researchers had not yet established a tight-knit relationship with the U.S. military. The roots of this relationship go back to Walter Reed and yellow fever and continued to develop with Thomas Francis Jr. and influenza. In 1941, the Roosevelt administration created the Office of Scientific Research and Development. Directed by Vannevar Bush, who later became chairman of the board of Merck & Company, the office worked closely with pharmaceutical companies to mass-produce penicillin for American soldiers. At that time, it became evident that there was no better customer than the U.S. government at war. In the years 1936 to 1945, the Imperial Japanese Army's Unit 731 conducted a covert biological warfare program in Manchuria, China, in which it experimented with various pathogenic agents on Chinese, Russian, and Korean prisoners, and dispersed these agents on various Chinese cities. An estimated 12,000 experimental human subjects were killed in horribly gruesome ways, and an estimated 250,000 Chinese people are estimated to have died from infectious diseases spread by Unit 731. In a notable example of the scientific mind becoming unmoored from human empathy and ethics, some Japanese doctors who participated in the program published their research findings in peer-reviewed journals with the claim that the experimental subjects were Manchurian monkeys. After Japan surrendered, General Douglas MacArthur granted secret immunity from prosecution to the doctors who ran the program in exchange for information about what they'd learned from their experiments. The U.S. military believed the information could be valuable and didn't want it to fall into Soviet hands. According to historian Sheldon Harris, in his book, Factories of Death, Japanese Secret Biological Warfare, 1932 to 1945, the U.S. government was complicit in concealing the program. Among the revelations that emerged after the war was that the Japanese Navy had contemplated launching an attack on U.S. West Coast cities using carrier-based aircraft to disperse weaponized bubonic plague, cholera, typhus, and dengue fever. Waging war by dispersing biological agents in the atmosphere is a difficult endeavor because many pathogens are impaired by exposure to oxygen and sunlight. Starting with Unit 731, many biowarfare analysts have perceived anthrax spores to be the most promising bioweapon for airborne dispersion. As part of its Operation White Coat, in September 1950, the U.S. Army conducted a simulated bioweapons attack on San Francisco. From a naval vessel 2 miles off the coast of the city, a large quantity of purportedly harmless Serratia marcescens and Bacillus globigii organisms were dispersed into a favorable onshore wind. The experiment revealed that most of San Francisco's populace had inhaled substantial amounts of S. marcescens. This experiment contributed to the development of an anthrax vaccine using filtrates of attenuated strains of the anthrax bacillus. During the Cold War, the U.S. government was able to build and maintain the vast military-industrial complex that Eisenhower warned about because of the purported Soviet threat. During the 1960s, the United States and the Soviet Union developed advanced bioweapons. U.S. development was led by the U.S. Army Chemical Corps, which operated an R&D lab at Fort Detrick in Maryland, a testing site at Dugway Proving Ground in Utah, and a factory at Pine Bluff Arsenal in Arkansas that produced biological warfare agents and loaded them into munitions. The program got some bad press in March 1968 when an open-air test of the nerve agent VX at Dugway Proving Ground got out of control and produced a toxic cloud that drifted off the test range and killed thousands of sheep in an adjacent grazing area. The DOD begrudgingly paid monetary damages to the farmers, but refused to acknowledge responsibility for the incident. Additional bad publicity struck in 1969 when it emerged that the Army had been secretly disposing of leaking chemical weapons by shipping them across the country by train and loading them onto surplus ships that were scuttled at sea, an operation known as Project Chase, an acronym for Cut Holes and Sink 'em. Learning of this incident, many in Congress perceived that the military was totally wanton and reckless. In the wake of this bad press, the Nixon administration ordered a review of the chemical and biological weapons program and concluded that the latter was especially dangerous and morally repugnant. On November 25, 1969, Nixon hosted a White House press conference at which he announced, "Biological weapons have massive, unpredictable, and potentially uncontrollable consequences. They may produce global epidemics and impair the health of future generations." Recognizing this, he declared that the United States had decided to destroy its biological weapons and limit its biological research program to defensive measures such as vaccines. This was the first time in history that a major power had unilaterally banned an entire armament category, and it paved the way for the 1972 Biological and Toxin Weapons Convention, BWC. However, the provision for maintaining a defensive biological research program created a loophole that later came to be known as dual-use research of concern, DURC. That is, researching and even enhancing potential bioweapons for the declared purpose of creating vaccines against them. A highly transmissible respiratory virus can be spread without military equipment and munitions. this loophole was the genesis of the disaster that struck humanity in early 2020. With the Cold War ending in 1991, it seemed there were no major threats left in the world, at least none that could reach across the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans to strike the American homeland. However, with the Iraqi invasion of Kuwait in that same year, the U.S. military remained in business. An anthrax vaccine, licensed in 1970, was administered to U.S. service personnel and the service personnel of four other nations who served in the Gulf War of 1991. Service personnel from 31 other nations also served in the combat theater. Suspicions subsequently arose that this vaccine may have been the cause of Gulf War syndrome, whose symptoms included fatigue, headaches, joint pain, indigestion, insomnia, dizziness, respiratory disorders, and memory problems. Especially remarkable was the fact that symptoms of this syndrome were prevalent among vaccinated soldiers, but not among the unvaccinated. Norman Fenton, professor of risk information management at Queen Mary University of London, calculated, "There is no more than a 1 in 1.25 million chance that the pattern of normal and abnormal rates of illness observed between the vaccinated and unvaccinated nations could happen without a causal explanation." Moreover, between March 1998 and May 2001, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, VAERS, logged a very high rate of adverse event reports for anthrax vaccine relative to other vaccines, 1,750 reports, or one report for every 300 vaccine recipients. President Clinton apparently wasn't too concerned about this, as his administration mandated it for all U.S. service personnel. However, on June 5, 2001, with ongoing safety concerns about the vaccine, the anthrax vaccine immunization program was restricted to include only designated special mission units, manufacturing and Department of Defense research personnel, and congressionally mandated anthrax vaccine research. About 3 months later, September 18, 2001, 1 week after the 9/11 terrorist attacks, letters containing anthrax spores arrived at news media offices and at the offices of Senators Tom Daschle and Patrick Leahy, who were leading opposition to the Patriot Act. These attacks killed 5 people and infected 17 others. These attacks resuscitated the military's anthrax program, and on June 28, 2002, all military personnel were again required to receive the vaccine. Though the attacks were staged to appear to be the work of either Iraqi agents or Islamic terrorists, the FBI suspected that the perpetrator was someone working within the American biodefense industry. Investigators claimed that Stephen Hatfill, a biological weapons expert working at a company in McLean, Virginia, was a suspect and conducted an intrusive and damaging investigation before exonerating him and paying a significant damage settlement in 2008. Another person of interest identified by the FBI in 2002 was Bruce Edward Ivins, a scientist working at Fort Detrick's Biodefense Lab. As author Scott R. Decker described the suspect in the book, Recounting the Anthrax Attacks, Ivins was a senior member of the U.S. Army's Bacteriology Division at USAMRID and had been instrumental in anthrax vaccine development and production. Until recently, the Army had viewed his vaccine work as critical. In December 1997, Secretary of Defense William S. Cohen went so far as to mandate that all U.S. soldiers, sailors, and airmen receive the inoculation. However, claims of the vaccine being connected to Gulf War syndrome made Cohen's directive controversial. Severe criticism by the media followed. Compounding the health and safety concerns, officials at the Pentagon began to view a widespread battlefield attack with anthrax as unlikely. Also, in the year 2000, Ivins had co-authored a patent application for a new generation of vaccine developed through genetic engineering, which Ivins clearly hoped would replace the decades-old, controversial BioPort product. According to Decker, Ivins feared that his life's work was imperiled. He therefore decided to show the U.S. government and media just how much the country needed his anthrax vaccine by attacking both establishments with anthrax spores. Even though the FBI quickly concluded the attacks were not the action of a hostile foreign agent, Ivins's gambit initially worked as he intended. In June 2002, the DOD reinstated the anthrax vaccine mandate for U.S. service personnel, and Congress passed the Public Health, Security, and Bioterrorism Preparedness and Response Act, with additional funds allocated for vaccine development. However, due to ongoing safety concerns, the anthrax vaccine mandate for U.S. soldiers was again challenged in court, and protracted litigation ensued that lasted until 2008, when a federal judge upheld an earlier ruling that it was a violation of federal law for military personnel to be subjected to involuntary AVA inoculation, because the vaccine was neither the subject of a presidential waiver nor licensed for use against inhalation anthrax. It's a conspicuous fact that the FBI made little progress with its investigation while this court battle played out, raising the suspicion that the FBI's focus on Stephen Hatfill was a pretense for buying time while the court contest played out. After harassing Hatfill for 6 years, the FBI put Bruce Ivins under surveillance in April 2007. The investigation of him intensified only after the DOD lost the legal battle in March 2008. On July 29, 2008, Ivins purportedly committed suicide by overdosing on acetaminophen after he learned that he was probably going to be arrested. On August 6, 2008, federal prosecutors declared Ivins the sole perpetrator. In other words, according to the FBI, the anthrax bioterrorism attack of 2001 that seemingly justified the DOD's controversial anthrax vaccine mandate for U.S. service personnel was committed by a senior DOD scientist. Many independent investigators regarded the case against Ivins as controversial, though his brother, Tom Ivins, told NBC News, "It makes sense. He considered himself like a god." We find it highly suspicious that the FBI only moved against him after the DOD lost its legal bid to maintain the anthrax vaccine mandate for U.S. service personnel. What is clear about this incident is that it wasn't Iraqi agents or Islamic terrorists who mailed the anthrax-contaminated letters, but someone within the American biopharmaceutical complex. That is, the vast public-private partnership between the U.S. military, biolabs, and pharmaceutical companies that claim to be in the business of protecting Americans from hostile foreigners and dangerous pathogens. Reviewing the record of U.S. biodefense blunders over the last 25 years, one may reasonably conclude that the biggest threat to the American people is not hostile foreign actors or emerging infectious diseases, but the biopharmaceutical complex and its laboratories stocked with dangerous infectious agents and its obsession with creating experimental vaccines against them. The testimony of Tom Ivins that his brother Bruce considered himself like a god is apt and goes to the heart of the problem. Since Louis Pasteur's quest for vaccine glory, biotechnicians have developed a pernicious mental habit of believing they know far more about nature than they do. Many of these men are catastrophically lacking humility and awareness of their limitations. On March 19, 2003, the United States military launched its war against Iraq with the stated mission of disarming Saddam Hussein, whom the U.S. government claimed to be in possession of illegal weapons of mass destruction. Critical observers noted that if there was ever a time for Hussein to use these purported weapons, which were said to include anthrax and chemical agents, it was against the invading U.S. military. The salient fact that he didn't, and the equally salient fact that no weapons of mass destruction were found, did not diminish the U.S. government's zeal for further expanding the power of the national security state, especially the biosecurity apparatus in which the alleged anthrax serial killer, Bruce Ivins, had worked. In 2004, Congress passed the BioShield Act to accelerate the research, development, purchase, and availability of effective medical countermeasures against CBRN, chemical, biological, radiological, and nuclear threats. The following year, Congress passed the Public Readiness and Emergency Preparedness, PREP, Act, which granted liability protection for countermeasures such as new vaccines against biological threats. While Ted Kennedy from Massachusetts grumbled about the PREP Act being a gigantic liability protection giveaway to Big Pharma, not a single senator voted against it, though seven abstained from voting. The word countermeasure comes from the military lexicon and refers to technologies and actions for countering an attack. By the year 2005, it was hard for any sane person to imagine armed soldiers attacking the American homeland, especially considering the entire Atlantic and Pacific Oceans are patrolled by a vast fleet of U.S. Navy vessels equipped with enough firepower to destroy entire cities. The new threat for the 21st century was purportedly not men that one can see and kill, but invisible pathogens that spread silently and insidiously, making everyone sick. The American people were told that biodefense scientists could, with vast funding, counter this threat. In the event of a public health emergency, declared by the Secretary of Health and Human Services, these scientists and their associates in the pharmaceutical industry would create countermeasures such as vaccines to protect every man, woman, and child in the country from the invisible menace. All that was required of the citizenry was to trust this high priesthood of biotechnicians and to accept that they could not be held liable if their products injured or killed people. What could go wrong?